Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Mayhem by Matthew Peed. Narrated by Eva Kaminsky. Chapter 1. Oberon. Normally, at times like this, I would be standing on the hill watching as the city rejoiced about surviving whatever impending doom had threatened it. Those memories were strong in my mind, having experienced that scene many times. This was the first time, however, that I stood on the hill watching as the city burned and people screamed for a savior. I found that I quite enjoyed the scene. Of course, this is just the reward for a city that would allow one of my family to be turned into a door prize for some noble. This would serve as a wake-up call for others, to inform them that the most powerful sorcerer known to the races had returned. Not today, of course. Some time from now, when I knew I was ready to fight the forces of the light. Then they would know the true mastermind. We would be making great time if not for all the extra baggage, I said, pointing behind me at the half a dozen wagons following us. We had been traveling for a week now, and crossed a third of the distance that we normally would have. I looked over to Alessa, my very distant relation of a few centuries. When I'd been a king, I'd had a rather large harem. Not my idea, of course, but I didn't exactly fight it. Alessa was related to my human wife of that distant time in the past. Alessa had recently become a vampire. Still, her beauty would soon be enough to cause a large number of problems if she didn't learn self-control. She seemed to like handsome members of the opposite sex. Not a bad thing in itself, but still a troublesome issue. I couldn't just leave them there to die. Plus, they swore to follow us, Alessa said, crossing her arms over her chest in defense. I couldn't blame her too harshly. She was still only a 14-year-old girl. She might have become a vampire recently, but her morals were still in the process of shifting to the dark side.
If everyone were true to their word, there wouldn't be any wars, I retorted with a chuckle.
Leave the girl alone. We managed to leave the city without issue. And from the grin I see on your face every now and then, you're still getting experience from the undead infesting that place now.
Helena, my other companion, said, waving a small fan in front of her. A girl who looked like she was barely 10 years old sat on the other side of the wagon. However, I wouldn't be fooled by her appearance. She was over 500 years old. Cyteth, the god of death, had sent her here to teach Alessa about being a vampire after we'd struck a bit of a deal. Regarding that, I needed to actually give it some thought. He wanted to be a country deity, a first for the god, but not many of the races would want such a god as their guardian. Yeah, I said, waving her off. I peeked outside and saw another caravan in the distance. It appeared many people were fleeing toward the coast, in fear of being on the front lines of a war that might break out. We had placed evidence that it was an attack by another country, after all. If the flames of war weren't already present, then our trick in the city wouldn't cause too many waves. However, if there was someone just searching for an excuse, then we'd experience quite a bit of tribulation soon. One thing I remembered from my previous life, there were always people looking to start a war. We drew closer to the other caravan, then moved to the side to pass them. I examined the ragged wagons that were looking rather roughed up, and decided they must have been hit by bandits or something. Turns out my thought was closer to the mark than I expected. Before I had a chance to say anything, an arrow whizzed through a rip in the fabric covering one of the wagons and nailed me right through the eye visor. That was the signal for at least 40 bandits to jump from the wagons onto ours, which contained mostly women who had barely fought a day in their lives. With a lot of hooting and hollering, the caravans ground to a halt. A man who looked like he'd not seen a bath in years landed on our wagon with how filthy he was, only to be kicked full in the chest by Alessa. He went flying, his body exploding to pieces when it struck a second tree. I stood up and looked at the bandits as they stared at the place that now dripped blood from branches and limbs. "That wasn't very welcoming," I said, then pulled the arrow from the socket in the helmet. "What the fuck?" one of the men shouted.
"Why does filth always bother us? It has to be something about you,"
Helena said from next to me. "I think the number of flowers is the cause this time," I retorted, while glancing at the women and the few men of the gallery where Alessa's mother had been kept. They were of enviable levels of beauty, and likely to attract anything with a libido in the area.
"Fair enough. What do you want to do?"
Helena asked. "I'm a bit hungry," Alessa said, licking her lips and reaching toward the bandits.
"Alessa, you don't know where they've been,"
Helena said, with a smack to Alessa's hand. The men were starting to get over their shock from the way their comrade had died and bared their weapons at us. I merely grinned and channeled a spell into my gauntlet that caused their low-quality metal items to come flying toward it. Thrusting my hand to the side, I flung all the weapons in that direction after I cut off the spell. A few other items followed along, but we could recover those once we were done. A simple but effective magnetism spell. "Now, what to do with these gentlemen?" I said, tapping my chin. "Ah, I know." I waved my hand, and the usual blade storm formed around me. Only instead of them being launched at the bandits, they flew into the hands of the women. A few freaked out and dropped them, but they didn't fall far before they floated back to their hands. A few of the more skittish bandits tried to make a run for it at the display of magic. I couldn't have that. I tapped my foot, sending a wave of mana into the ground that formed into stone chains that wrapped around the fleeing bandits. There wasn't anyone too high level. I almost started to pity their fates. "Ladies, I would like you all to proceed to stab the nearest bandit to you," I called out so everyone could hear me. A few screams later, they finally calmed down once they realized it wasn't changing my mind. "This is for your own good. As you can see, I'm not a nice person. If you want to continue surviving, you will have to carry your weight. You don't want me to carry it for you." With a gesture, the neck of one of the men captured by my stone-binding spell broke. His body went limp, but the chains held him up and in place. With a word, necromantic energy left my hand and sank into the body. I went with changing him into a zombie, as one body exploding into gore was enough for now. His eyes filled with a greenish-blackish light before he began to try to get at a nearby bandit.
"Dota! What have you done, monster?"
one of the bandits yelled after witnessing the event.
"Why, I started carrying his weight," I commented, and the women jerked as they realized what I meant. Their grips tightened around the ethereal blades in their hands.
"Ladies, you know what to do by this point."
Tension filled the air as no one moved. I think I counted 10 seconds before the first woman, a lady who had been on the top floor with Alessa's mother, lurched forward and drove her blade into the chest of the bandit nearest her. That caused a chain reaction, where all the women who wanted to live jumped into action, driving their weapons into the bandits. Screams of pain from those bandits whose wounds weren't fatal filled the air.
"At least some of you will be usable,"
Helena commented from next to me. I nodded at her statement. Of the 46 people, only 15 stuck out. The rest quivered in fear or hesitation for some other reason. Alessa held her hand out, and pink mana swirled around it. I still had no idea why the hell her mana turned pink, and at this point, I just didn't care. The rest of the living bandits started to scream at a whole new level, as the blood in their veins was pulled from every pore. A crimson ball formed over her shoulder, then another one,
Once all the blood from the bandits, living or dead, was pulled free, she had 4 of the balls, roughly 1 ball per 10 people. I see the water magic is coming along nicely. Never thought I'd see it used in such a way, I said, shaking my head while looking over her spellwork. With this magic, you needed at least a decent amount of mana to be able to defend against it. Again, reminding me of the importance of seeing things from different angles. The balls appeared to harden, but it was only the outer layer. With this, Alessa would have a decent supply of blood, which she could use to rapidly heal wounds or restore some mana. They landed in her hand, and she attached them to a chain around her waist. There was already a group there from the few monsters that had risked attacking us in the middle of the night. At least I won't get hungry like on the trip here. I do wish there was a way to make it taste fresh, Alessa said, tossing and catching one of the balls.
Ted, practice time,
I shouted into the wagon. There was a bang. Then a man with looks that would be easily forgettable if you saw him in a crowd stuck his head out from inside the wagon. He was rubbing his forehead.
What? He asked with a yawn.
We have some bodies out here that need to get up, I said, patting his shoulder.
Got it, he said with another yawn.
I watched him walk over to a corpse and start drawing runes on it. He'd come a long way since we'd found him in a cave a few weeks ago. After only a few seconds went by, the corpse slowly rose to its feet and walked into the forest. It shambled for a moment, but soon gained speed as it limbered up, though it was more of a husk.
Amri, how are you doing? I asked, moving over to the woman.
It would take Ted a few minutes to get all 40 corpses up and moving. Amri stared off into the woods as if deep in thought. The woman had reacted much more calmly to finding out my identity, but from her body, I could tell she had lived a much harder life than most people her age. At least she was accepting, at the moment, the fact that her daughter had not only become a vampire, but also a fledgling necromancer. Whether she continued accepting that fact remained to be seen.
Oberon, it has been 7 years since I was a free woman. I feel lost, she said, glancing over to her daughter, then back to the forest.
I wouldn't worry too much about it. Now that you're free, you have plenty of time to figure out what you want to do, I said, patting her head like I would a child. I chuckled when she gave me a narrow-eyed glare. You can complain when you've got 100 years under your belt. You're what? 29. I can treat you like a daughter if I want. She kept the glare up for a few seconds longer, then sighed with a nod. I liked people who accepted their fates quickly. She was one of the few people in the world that I didn't want to tear limb from limb.
Mother, did you see that?
Alessa came up to Amri with a smile and a skip in her step.
Amazing, Amri answered, though I noticed she wore a tight smile.
I rubbed my chin, but decided not to say anything. If she had a problem with the path her daughter was heading down, then she needed to say something. I didn't know the kind of person Amri was. If she was too morally set in her ways, then I could see problems in the future.
Alessa. I poked a fang into one of my blood crystals. Pulling some of the liquid in, I satiated my thirst for a few hours. The crystals were useful, but fell short in comparison to fresh blood. I did feel slightly awkward using them around my mother. I still wasn't sure how I was supposed to act around her.
Mother, what are you thinking about? I asked her, after at least 3 hours of silence had passed since the bandit attack. She gave me a smile. That is rather complicated. It's not every day that you get rescued by your daughter. For so long, I could only pray that you were still alive, forced out in the world as you were. Now you're here in front of me, but, well, like I said, it's complicated. You don't like what I've become, do you? I said, looking at the ground. I understand the circumstances behind it. Oberon filled me in while you were drinking a little while ago. I can't say I'm comfortable with it, but I promise I won't hold it against you. I nodded, though it was a bit sad to hear it. I knew this reaction was to be expected. In fact, most people would likely run screaming for the hills if they had a choice. Not only were there two vampires in this party, but also a lich of untold power and a wannabe necromancer. To normal people, this would be a party of evil if there ever was one. I gave her a tight smile, then made my way back to one of the other carts. The woman who had been with my mother was about my age, and we'd been hitting it off rather well. She didn't seem to outright fear me like many of the others.
Jade. Lady Alessa, what do you need?
The woman asked when I appeared next to her. I just wanted some company. Don't call me Lady.
Ah, don't worry. I spent a few weeks with your mother in that place. She will be able to accept this if you give her some time and space. As for calling you a lady, I really must insist. If what you tell me is true, the rightful ruler of the world is your ancestor.
If you say so, I muttered, then blinked as I looked at her. Do you miss your family? She gave a tight laugh.
That is a bit complicated.
I'm hearing that word a lot today, I said, leaning back on the seat.
Ha ha, Jade said sarcastically. My family wanted to use me, though I knew they loved me. How do you stay angry at people you've known all your life, who were trying to look out for you while not even thinking about you?
I guess it is complicated.
Exactly.
We chatted for a few hours. The journey was a straight shot to Haven. Oberon refused to stop at any of the towns or cities on the way. Luckily, we weren't the only ones traveling, so we weren't stopped near cities. The one time we were stopped next to a town, which appeared to have seen a few bandit raids, it ended horribly. For the guards, that was. A few nights into the journey, Helana was helping me with unlocking my new vampire form. She possessed several and was trying to help me get the feel for it. I don't know why, but the idea of changing my body into something else just gave me a headache.
Why are you having so much trouble with this? Your body has already changed once when you became a vampire.
I know, but... I grumbled under my breath. I just couldn't wrap my head around the idea.
But what?
She said, crossing her arms over her chest. Normally, it would be hard not to chuckle at the sight of the vampire with an appearance of a 10-year-old acting in such a way. But we'd all learned the hard way not to make fun of her appearance. She was the most powerful of the group, though Oberon was quickly catching up with her. I don't know. I just feel like there is a wall pushing on my body when I try to change.
You're going to be one of those,
Helana said, putting a hand to her temple. Those? I asked, confused.
The type that can't do things until it becomes a life-or-death situation. There is always one every couple of years.
Lucky me, I said with a groan. She snorted, then walked off. I didn't even attempt to follow her as she burst into shadow. Then some bats flew out of the trees. I sighed and hung my head, as she was obviously showing me what I was missing out on.
Rough night,
a voice behind me asked. I jerked around to see Oberon leaning against the tree. Now that his body had a layer of skin, he could make facial expressions. Right now, he was smirking at me, though it was much more sickly-looking and could cause shivers to go up the backs of people who weren't used to his appearance.
You could say that?
I feel like I'm at a crossroads, I said, falling back to look up at the sky. The stars were particularly vibrant tonight. I couldn't help but feel they were mocking me.
Let me guess. Embrace the night, or try to stay in the light with your mother?
Maybe. I know I would be dead if I hadn't become a vampire, but I finally got my mother back. I feel like I'm about to lose her again. Oberon walked over and sat on a tree stump. I saw him look up at the night sky. We were doing the same thing, but I felt like he could see so much more than me.
If you play your cards right, you will live forever. Stuck eternally in time like a picture. Eternity gives you time to play out more than one life. If you want to stay in the light for now, there is nothing wrong with that. You can take your mother and find a place to hide away from the world.
I looked at him, surprised. I never thought he would suggest something like this. I couldn't even think of anything to say.
Just remember, you will still have to run and hide even in the light. All thanks to that tattoo on your back. The same for your mother, he finished, then got up and walked away.
That's right. I'd forgotten, thanks to getting my mother back. But there were people who needed to pay for making my entire bloodline suffer. I turned back to the night sky and stared into it as the thoughts rolled through my mind.
Well, this place looks a lot different,
Helana said as we wound through the forest.
That usually happens when range guardians are killed,
Oberon said, looking into the distance. What could kill a range guardian? I asked. Range guardians protected the forests from taint and other invaders. They were immensely powerful while in their domain. It had taken several hundred adventurers to take down one a few years back. It was almost easier just to build settlements while avoiding them completely.
Another range guardian. I didn't think he'd have access to the abilities he had while alive, considering how deep he was underground. I expect he was a guardian from several centuries ago, if not longer. I actually feel bad about the range guardians now,
Oberon said, almost muttering to himself.
Him?
Helana asked with a raised eyebrow.
Yes. I might have raised one while we were making our way through here. It looks like he's doing well for himself.
I looked to the forest around us. It was more of a hellish, twisted version with black miasma coiling through the air. Strange plant life grew up and appeared to be strangling the trees and other underbrush. We hadn't seen a single creature since entering the strange place. I wasn't sure I wanted to see what twisted things this place would conjure either. The women in the cart started to cough or fall ill, and Oberon called for a stop. He examined my mother, since she was the most comfortable with him. After a few minutes, he nodded and rummaged through the various items in the cart. He found a jewel or crystal and placed his hand on it as he chanted. After another 10 or 15 minutes, he finished as the jewel flashed. Grabbing some leather strips, he made a rather poor choker and attached the jewel to it. When my mother wore it, she started to recover from the miasma sickness. Oberon looked at the women and men in the carts, then started making more. A few hours later, he finished, and everyone had a miasma cleanser. I found it ironic that an undead would create something that could help adventurers fight the undead. I doubted he would allow any of these to walk away. We didn't want to test the limits of the inscripted jewels, so we made haste out of the forest. Oberon looked like he wanted to look for the undead range guardian, but Helana and I overruled him. It wouldn't be a joke if he was unable to control the thing and it ate everyone. He grumbled and groaned, but finally nodded, listening to reason. Finally, after 2 weeks, we made it to Ghoul, or at least the burned husk of the town. Undead wandered aimlessly in the streets, and it looked like a large battle had been waged around several of the buildings. Oberon went in ahead of us and made sure all the undead were claimed as his. Apparently, he'd left a little present here when we'd stopped for the night.
Did you do this at every place you stopped?
Helana asked, peeking through a burned-out window. He shrugged.
I honestly didn't think it would cause this. It was a single rat, after all.
Knowing you, it was probably a level 100 rat or something, I said, shaking my head at the surroundings. It was just ridiculous that the losing of a single rat had resulted in this.
They win some, they lose some, he replied with a laugh. Let's hurry and get back to Haven.
Chapter 2 Off the Atos continent, North Coast.
Keep the wind in the sails. We can outrun those bloody pirates with the wind on our side,
Captain Deus shouted at the deck crew. He glanced back to see 7 ships sporting the Pirate Queen Jupiter's colors. He hadn't expected them to be this close to the border mountains of the Eye of the World. But sometimes luck wasn't with you. Captain Deus spun the helm to keep the sail full. Sweat poured down his face, along with the faces of the rest of the crew. He managed to turn the ship just in time as several cannonballs sailed past. The water exploded, making it rain on the deck.
Captain, they're managing to gain on us!
You don't think I can see that?
He shouted back at his first mate. The ship rocked from an impact that struck the starboard side. Screams of pain came from the lower deck.
Seal that breach!
There was a flash of light. Then the day darkened considerably. A rush of air slammed into the ship, throwing everyone to the ground. Captain Deus grabbed the rail and pulled himself up.
What the fuck was that?
He turned to look and saw three of the pirate ships sinking while partially in flames. They'd been cleanly sliced in half. He could just barely make out people in the water.
Captain!
A sailor shouted, pointing toward the distance. Captain Deus turned to see an island of land floating several hundred meters in the air. As he watched, a beam of mana fired from the island and turned another two pirate ships to floating tinder.
What is that thing doing out here?
Captain Deus shouted, falling back to the deck. The remaining pirate ships came about and tried to sail away, but they were no match for the range of weapons on the floating island. Three more beams of energy were fired instantly, turning the remainder of the ships to driftwood. Deus's own ship had been carried a good distance with the wind, but he worried it wasn't far enough. A beam of energy fired directly toward them. Whether it was the intervention of the Goddess of Fate, or another act of nature that couldn't be explained by the workings of mortals, for whatever reason, the beam struck just behind the ship, vaporizing the water. The resulting explosion propelled the ship several hundred meters in the span of a few seconds. Everyone aboard braced themselves for another attack, but it never came. The island passed the area and was nearly out of sight before they could make out any more details. Everyone heaved a breath of relief until they saw another explosion in the distance.
"What was the Golden Fortress doing out here? It hasn't changed course in 900 years,
the first mate said, slamming his fist on the railing.
"We need to report this as soon as possible. I doubt they don't already know, but I want to make sure,"
Captain Deus said.
"Set course for the nearest safe port."
Just as he gave the order, the main mast cracked and fell to the side. Captain Deus took a deep breath.
"After we make repairs."
An elderly man slammed his staff on the ground, hard enough to crack the marble under him.
"What could this mean? The Golden Fortress hasn't changed course in over 900 years. That thing forced us to change how we developed our countries due to its ridiculous amount of firepower."
The changing course of the Golden Fortress had forced a gathering of the representatives from all the countries on the Atos continent. That was how important this matter was. Everyone had managed to put aside their petty differences for the moment. With the countries almost always at war, it was a remarkable feat, to say the least. "King Grindwald, I understand, but look at it this way. It has been reported to be heading for the Igorox continent. This might mean a change in the wind for our continent. With that dreadful thing out of our skies, we will have much more land to develop. All this fighting may come to an end for a while," said a young woman, who appeared to glow from where she sat on a steel throne.
"Your Highness Clorinda, I certainly am inclined to agree with you there, but it might be heading to Igorox for now. But what if it returns? Or worse, what if the Iron Maiden makes its way over here? Compared to that thing, I would prefer the Golden Fortress."
"Do we have any news on the Iron Maiden?"
a well-built man in his 40s asked. The other two looked at him while trying to hide the contempt in their faces. Of the three countries on the Atos continent, two were ruled by humans. The other, and current ruler of over half of the land, was predominantly beastkin. The man who'd last spoken had two antlers that were easily wicked enough to skewer someone.
"Huxir. No, we don't. How about you?"
Grinwald asked with a snort.
"How do you expect us to have any information, given that your fleets keep us locked to the land?"
Huxir said, sliding his nail along one of his antlers. Covering her mouth with a fan, Clorinda said, "Animals should remain in the fields where they belong."
"Huh?"
Sample complete. Ready to continue?